The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. Sitting here just reading a couple of polls. Here's a headline. Vast majority of Americans will not vote for a socialist. It was a new Hill TV Harris X American Barometer poll. 76% of respondents in a recent survey said that they would not vote for a socialist candidate. 76%. 24% of those polled said that they have no problem with a hypothetical socialist candidate. Now, do you know how I know that this poll is bogus? Because it was 76% who said they would. 24% said they would not. That adds up to exactly 100%. Nobody said,
I don't know.
Nobody said,
not sure.
So that's why I doubt the credibility of this poll. And I do believe that of that 76% of respondents in that Hill TV Harris X poll who said that, I do believe that there was a certain percentage who would say, I'd never vote for a socialist, just give me my free stuff. I want my free stuff, but I'm never going to vote for a socialist. Give me my free stuff. Where's my free stuff? The one thing, and again, I can't... I won't vouch for the accuracy of this poll. Do I believe it's more like 50-50? Yeah, I just believe that socialist still, in many people's mind, is a dirty word. I do think that that's why you see the Ocasio-Cortezes call themselves, well, I'm not a socialist, I'm a Democrat socialist. That's why I believe that some of the biggest socialists out there, Maxine Waters, for example, who called a few years back for the nationalization, that means government ownership of oil companies. And she came out the other day and said, I'm a capitalist. I think it's the word. As we have always said, Democrats believe that the people that vote for them are idiots. If you vote for Democrats, they believe you're an idiot. Our proof, the undeniable proof, came during the Obamacare sell, where we know that, we all know that President Obama lied repeatedly about what was inside of Obamacare. And we knew it when he said it. And when we called him a liar, well, we got called every name in the book. That's fine. There's no problem with that, but it did upset a lot of people. And we said at that point to Democrats, he's lying to you. The Democrat leadership is lying to you. They're not lying to Republicans. They know Republicans don't support it. So they're lying to you. They believe that if they tell you the truth about Obamacare, that you won't vote for it. So they're lying to you. And then we remember afterwards, oh, yeah, the stupid American public. So, they sit there, and if it's a, I don't think, because, look, when you look at a Maxine Waters, when you look at the vast majority now of Democrats, they are much more socialist. And we went through this debate the other day about the degree of socialism, because we always get the call once in a while. And even though we answered the call, it does get tiresome. Well, you know, if you have a government, then that's socialism to begin with. Yes, there are degrees of socialism. It's about having a limited federal government and government we believe that provides more services should be closer to the people, should be the state or the locals. We want limited government. And there is, we said, as we explained to the gentleman, there's a difference between if you believe that government should take 15 to 20% of your income, government across the board, and if you believe they should take 95% of your income. That huge middle amount of cash that we're talking about is what gives you the opportunity to experience freedom. And so we had to answer. And again, that call we got earlier this week, we hadn't had one of those in a while. But so when I see this here, 76% of respondents in the recent survey said they would not vote for a socialist candidate. I do believe that that still has a bad taste in a lot of Democrats' mouths from the 2008 campaign. When President Obama was called a socialist, that he, you know, the accusation was, if you call him a socialist, you're calling him the new N-word. So I still think that marketing-wise, that's why you see a lot of the Democrat leadership walking away from it, or even Ocasio-Cortez. Well, look, we're not socialists. We're Democrat socialists. We're Democratic socialists. And there's a huge difference between a democratic socialist and a socialist. Could you please explain that to me in specific details? Which, of course, they have not. So there you go. Now, that's, again, I won't vote for a socialist, but I will vote for somebody who will give me free stuff. Give me free stuff, but I hate socialism. The other poll that was done that I was just paying attention to, and there's been three of these polls done in the last year and a half by the YouGov and The Economist. The first one was done in the spring of 2017, and I'm by the way, I'm doing this from memory. I don't have that survey in front of me. I have the latest one. The other one was done in the spring of this year. And those polls showed it was in the 60 percentile that the majority of Democratic voters think that Russia tampered with the actual vote counts in the election. Well, they did it again. Now, it's down a little bit, but still 55% of Democrats believe it's either definitely true or probably true that Russia tampered with the vote tallies in order to get Donald Trump elected. Despite there never being any evidence ever to support that claim, or even any news stories that we could ever find. Now, the narrative was out there that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election. That statement was made. But as we know, there was never any article with any specific allegation anywhere. Now, the good thing is it seems as if in this poll, because from spring of 2017 to spring of 2018, it went up a couple of percentage points. Now it seems to have gone down, looks like around 10 percentage points, but still the majority of Democrats, 55%, believe something that is completely and totally a fantasy. They believe it's either definitely true or probably true that Russia tampered with the vote tallies. This was published on Wednesday. In contrast to Democratic voters, 69% of independents and 87% of Republicans said it's probably not true or definitely not true that Russia tampered with vote tallies. U.S. intelligence officials have concluded, and it's been out there, that even though Russia tried Russia's cyber attacks did not affect any final vote counts. And that has been out there over and over and over again. I think this is really important because when the media gets upset, the mainstream media, about the president using the term fake news, this is one of the reasons why, right there. Right there. That you keep a narrative going. And we brought to you, especially in early 2017, how many stories out there would actually say the allegation that the president colluded with the Russians to hack the election. And how many times that appeared, even though in the body of the story, it would never make that allegation. But that statement was constantly out there that Democrats picked up on it. And still, over a year and a half later, when the evidence shows from intelligence agencies, and there's no debate on this. Nobody's, there's not one Democrat debating going, no, the vote tallies were changed. No one's debating it. And still 55%, the majority of Democrats, believe a story that is completely and totally false. Which is why the media still continues to talk about Trump colluding with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. So there you go. We got a great show ahead. Eric's out this morning. So me and you, if you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE. Other stories out there. Is it a bombshell? Cohen's people say, we didn't say Trump knew about the Russian meeting. That story was going all over the place yesterday. Robert Mueller looking into the president's tweets for obstruction of justice. Does this show that he is a weak case? We'll hear some audio from Jonathan Turley, the constitutional expert, who is no Trump fan, and his opinion on that. Can the government bar a company from serving a free lunch in their cafeteria? This story, Eric and I, we didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday, but we had seen it yesterday. I think it was at Mountain View, California, has already implemented a law. San Francisco was thinking of doing it, and it's for some of the big companies where they're going to ban that you can't have a cafeteria and serve free food. Why? Because it hurts other businesses. That your employees at lunchtime should be forced to go out and eat elsewhere or bring their lunch. And we know it's just in a couple of cities out there, but the whole point is it will expand. When you think about it, you say, who in the world ever thinks, okay, it's my job to tell a company that they cannot have a cafeteria and give free lunch to their employees? Now, as Eric said, there's always a loophole. You just give them $20 a week, and then they pay, you know, they pay for the cost of the lunch. Can the government stop that? But if the government, if a local government can stop that perk, what other perks? I mean, are the Democrats now to the point where they're going to start going to companies instead of saying you ought to be giving your employees more, that we're going to force you to give your employees less? You can't provide them. You know what their argument is? Their argument is that if the cafeteria provides free food, that the people will not go outside and to different local restaurants and fast food places, and therefore not help the community as much as they believe they should be helping the community. So that coming up here. Another survey out there, the average person only has about 15 perfect days a year, in their opinion. The GDP to be released in the morning. Are the GOP already worried about the third quarter? You know what one of the key moments was in the trade talks between Trump and the EU president 2 days ago? This quote, if you can be stupid, we can be stupid, is what the EU president said to President Trump. If you can be stupid, we can be stupid. So we'll get to that and more. Plus, one of the stories that was really underreported that the Trump administration went before the House yesterday in the House of Representatives, the Republicans furious at the tariffs. Now that it's looking like, you know, a couple of predictions this week that better odds now for the Democrats to take the House in November. And even though a good GDP report is predicted, and who knows, the tariffs probably wouldn't take effect by the third quarter. But in these toss-up districts, Republicans are furious because workers there and companies there are furious because they're being hurt by the tariffs, which could help the Democrat in those particular districts. And Republicans are worried that the tariffs will help the Democrats take the House in November. So we'll get to that. Plus the Senate yesterday, the Senate unanimously passed a bill, and this got really no publicity at all, passed a bill that would take tariffs off of, I think it's 1,600 products that are being brought into the United States, half of them Chinese. So that and more all coming up, plus your calls and comments. If you'd like to get in, lines are open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley. He has the morning off. I'm Gary McNamara. A funny moment yesterday. I had to go. It was my normal physical, but it was also a physical for our insurance company, because if we get a physical and we abide by everything, we get a lower rate on our health insurance. And I mean, I had it scheduled anyway, but it was both. But so I go in. And, you know, with the nurse, and they, you know, the blood pressure and all this. And all of a sudden she's got the, you know, she's sitting in front of her laptop and, you know, she's typing in and I'm just, you know, just looking around, whatever. And all of a sudden I hear her say to me, so do you have any interests, you know, things you like to do? And I'm looking, what? She goes, do you have interests in things you like to do? And I said, what? And then I realized, oh, is this the depression survey? Well, yeah, these are questions we ask. I said, well, yeah, I love doing stuff. So I went in and talked to then when I met with my doctor, I said, so is that the depression test? And he said, yes. And I said, well, look, let me just answer this and you can keep this from now on. If anyone says, if the police come back and say I commit suicide, it's not true. he just laughed. He said, yeah, it's part of the, you know, it's part of the overall screening that they do. What I forgot to ask him was, well, wait a minute. Then if you viewed that I was depressed, were you going to ask if I owned a gun? But I forgot to ask that. I just forgot. We got a great show ahead. Tons of audio, too. 866-90-RED-EYE. If you'd like to get in, it's time for our national forecast brought to you by Cobra Electronics.
We're going to start to see a shift in the pattern that we've been experiencing much of this week. Now moving into the weekend, the hot weather will remain in the west, but the rain will begin to dry out in the east and northeast. We have a weak frontal boundary that's pushing through the central plains and Midwest, and once that rain is through, we will see some clearing skies and beautiful conditions for the weekend for places like Kansas City, Indianapolis, and Chicago. By tomorrow, that frontal boundary will be pushing into the south, so look for some scattered showers Saturday from North Texas into Louisiana and North Georgia. We'll see some periods of sunshine throughout the East Coast this weekend, but some spotty showers. Primarily along the coast, west of I-95 in the east and northeast, things will be drying out. Good chance for showers in the central Rockies tomorrow, including Denver and the Four Corners region, where rain is desperately needed, but it will remain dry and hot in the west. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The Bona Show.
And he is Eric Harley. He has the morning off. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So here you go. This is the real substance now. It's starting for the midterm elections. How do I know? House Democrats will introduce a bill to make college tuition free by minimizing debt and simplifying financial aid procedures. The AIM Higher Act, which is expected to hit the House, would grant states federal funding provided that they reciprocate by granting 2 years of tuition-free community college to students, the Washington Post reported earlier this week. Said Virginia Democrat Representative Robert Bobby Scott, the AIM Higher Act is a serious and comprehensive proposal to give every student the opportunity to earn a debt-free degree or credential. Not just debt-free, free. It provides immediate and long-term relief to students and parents struggling with the cost of college. It puts a greater focus on helping students graduate on time with a quality degree that leads to a rewarding career, and it cracks down on predatory for-profit colleges that peddle expensive, low-quality degrees at the expense of students and taxpayers. This from the DailySignal.com. But Sefton Hall University professor Robert Kelchin expressed skepticism when discussing the proposal with the Post. Taking away the flexibility would be a non-starter in many states, he said, referring to the lawmaking ability to divert higher education funds to other enterprises where spending is required. It may serve as a litmus test for people running for president in 2020, Kelchin said, referring to both the Democrats' bill as well as the Republican bill that attempts to extract the federal government from higher education as mandated by the Higher Education Act of 1965. The Republican bill would reduce taxpayer money directed toward higher education by cutting some student aid initiatives. It would also suggest that schools adjust their curriculum to meet employers' needs. So I guess the question is, and you know this is where we're going, should the government, should the taxpayer provide for a free college education for everyone? In this case, they're only going as far as community college, but you know where it's headed. We all know where it's headed. The Democrats want, and if they could, would be proposing a bill that would say free college for everyone. We word it in a different way. Should the taxpayer pay for free college for anyone who wants it? Now, there's two ways to look at it, at least from my point of view, two ways to look at it. Can we afford to do something like that? Is that the federal government's role to do something and fund something like that? And, of course, the answer would be no and no. Then there's the other point. And this is the economic and personal point of it. One of the reasons that colleges are so expensive today is because the money has been so easy. The reason that housing skyrocketed a few years back was because the government subsidized it on you, the taxpayer. You, the taxpayer, eventually had to pay the bill. When you have free money, whether it is for housing, if you have free and easy money, whether it's for housing or college, the cost skyrockets. One thing I can, and I credit, you know, Mark Cuban for a couple of years ago coming out and talking about the college bubble. He was one of the few doing it. Talking about, look, it's pure economics. If you skyrocket the amount of free money that's out there, the cost of that product that you are buying, when the free money exists and the free money can only be used for that product, that cost of that product will skyrocket. The other thing is, I look at my own life. I went to a community college for 2 years. By the way, I'm not claiming to be a martyr here. It's just what we did at that time. Everybody worked. All of my friends. Whenever I sit down and get together with my best friends, and I look at two specifically. Two of my best friends, that one I've known since I was 8 years old, the other one I met as a bill collector in college, right when I started college. And I worked a full-time job and a part-time job, and I went to college full-time. And everybody was working, everyone. And when we get together now, we'll sit down and we'll laugh. Did we ever lack party time? It's like, no. How did we do it? I never forget my buddy Jerry looked at me and said, "Dude, you never slept." I said, "We're too old to be calling each other dude." I didn't take education seriously when I was in high school. I did whatever I could to get by. When did I take it seriously? When it was on my back. One of the reasons that I worked was because I didn't want to go into a lot of debt. The one thing that college taught me that was even greater than what I learned in the classroom was time management. I valued my education so much more because I paid for it, worked my butt off to get it, and when I left college, was able to pay. I only took out one loan, and I was able to pay that loan in full without any interest, you know, on the last day that I could do that back then. The value of a product, which is education, was so much greater when I was responsible for it. I took it much more seriously. It was about, okay, what am I taking here? Where is it going to get to, you know, where is it going to, get me? Is this the right thing to be taking in college? Why? It was my money. When it's your money, you care a heck of a lot more. So for me, it would be a no. Not because I'm mean and uncaring, but I think I and you understand human nature. Our decisions about our own lives are, I believe, we make as human beings much better decisions with our lives when it is our sweat, our energy, and the money that we earn from that. We make much better decisions when our sweat equity is included in our decision making. And it's that simple. I think many on the left believe, no, if we give people free, then they will do the right thing with it. No, I think just the opposite. It becomes more expensive. You actually create more debt for many young people. Now, I think it was Mark Cuban who said, you know, when he was talking about the college bubble, he said no student should be able to borrow over $10,000 a year, $40,000 total. I can't even imagine doing that and going to college these days. I would just take a different route. If that's what it would cost me to do it, I would just take a different route. I would go to trade school. But again, you know, even after college, I jumped in and, you know, I worked as a machinist. I worked in a steel plant. I did a, you know, bunch of different things. So for me, it was always about getting the money first, because then the money gave me the opportunity, as I've said, the opportunity to be free to make the decisions that I wish to make, which I did a few years later, which was get into radio that I've been in since that was 1983. But all the experiences was the experiences of wanting to be self-sufficient without debt and working for it. To me, that's everything. That's even more important than getting to do the thing that I wanted to do my entire life. The work and the effort of doing things that I didn't think I was going to like doing and ended up liking them. Like I said, if it wasn't for the fact that I got laid off back in late 1982, I might not be in radio today. I'd probably be in industry or business. Now, I'm happy that the way that it worked out. But what I found out was everything that I thought I would love to do, or not even love to do, because the things that I loved to do back then, I probably still love to do now. But the things I thought I would hate, I ended up liking them a lot when I actually experienced them. And having the mindset of being self-sufficient and not getting into debt in college gave me experiences that were invaluable to me in my life. So that's the reason that I would be against a, you know, free college. Let's get to your calls and comments coming up here next. If you'd like to get in, lines are open now. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Eric has the morning off talking about the Democrats' proposal for free college for community college, a bill they're going to introduce. By the way, it's not going to go anywhere, but it will be used, I believe, as a issue in the midterms and also in the 2020 presidential election. And I think we all know that the goal of Democrats is to promote free college for all eventually. That would be their ultimate goal. So we're asking the question, do you believe there should be free college for all? By the way, when I talked about my college experience, not only did, you know, working a heck of a lot of hours during college teach me time management, it also taught me the value of the dollar. The things that I will say this, the things that I learned from going to college probably were more important in my life than actually what I learned in the classroom. And I'm sure it's different for other people. I'm just relating my experience. To you we go. Let's talk to Graham in North Carolina. Excuse me, Curtis in Graham, North Carolina. Curtis, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Actually, that's not the first time I've been called Graham, but anyway.
I'm sorry.
But
free college.
I don't know how that keeps happening, but yes, free college. Yeah. Well, first of all, just to set the pace here, I am absolutely against it. I'd like to compare what I do advocate to what I think is the way I think the chess game plays out. Now, I, for one, would say for most people, don't even bother with college. Don't even go. Avoid it like the plague. Unless you absolutely know what you want to do, don't even bother. At this point, I mean, there's no point in carrying a small mortgage for a career you're not even you don't even know what it is, and you're going to get fired from if you Facebook the wrong say the wrong thing on Facebook and all the rest of this malarkey. I frankly support a complete divorce of school and state, and frankly, a complete annihilation of so many regulations and nonsense that we can all just be truly self-sufficient, work for a living, but not with an employer. Just more like old-time America. Now, what I think is going to happen, or what the way they would play it out, is going so totally opposite of that, it ain't even funny. I think what they really want to do is first, give us free 2 years of college and give us free college. And basically, would take that along with Another thing they've been talking about now is guaranteed opportunity, which I think is ultimately going to play out to, they'll have a soft version of it eventually at first, but eventually it'll play out to, this is what you're going to do in college, you're being conscripted into this profession, and you are guaranteed to show up lest you go to prison. And between all of that and they're wanting to take control of children from birth, right now it's kindergarten, it's going to be pre-kindergarten, it's going to be mandatory,
I'll say that we're just running out of time. I will say this, I won't go as far as you will, that that's going to happen in our lifetime, but I do believe that colleges don't have to be accountable to the marketplace when it's free to go. Thanks so much for your call. Curtis, not Graham. I got it.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. It is the Friday show. Would love to hear from you. Get in now at 866-90-RED-EYE. By the way, I was just thinking that I mentioned last hour that yesterday I had, you know, had a doctor's appointment, just the normal 6-month physical that I have to go to, but it was my checkup physical for the insurance company also, and so they start over again, sort of on a lot of things, and they ask you all the depression questions, which it caught me off guard a little bit, which was a little funny, but as I said, when the nurse started asking me, and she caught me off guard completely when she said, well, do you like having interest in things to do? Like, what are you talking about? Well, yeah, of course I do. And then the other questions started coming in, and I realized, oh, okay. I said, this is the depression questionnaire, correct? Yeah. And so, you know, and they ask you all the questions. Do you ever feel that life is not worth living? And yes, there was a part of me when I was taking, answering the questions that thought, I better not answer, we're doomed. That thought did go through my head. So what do you think? Well, my co-host all the time tells me it's over, we're doomed. And so we really don't care anymore. It's like, I better not joke about that. To the last caller, as we're talking about the Democrats' tuition-free college bill that they are introducing. Now, it's not going to go anywhere, but it's, again, something that they want to use as an issue for the midterms, and I'm sure as a benchmark for the 2020 presidential election. And the last caller made a point saying, unless you know exactly what you're going for college for, and you know, you're probably better off not to go. And I started thinking, yeah, I mean, you look at a lot of the majors out there, they're completely and totally useless. And Eric and I have asked the question for the longest time, when will parents and their kids finally look at the return on the investment of going into debt $100,000 for a useless degree? And I hadn't done this in a couple of years, looked at the top salaries and the top demand for a 4-year degree. Hadn't looked at it in a couple of years. It remains relatively unchanged. These are the top 10 college majors with the best starting salaries, which means they're in demand the most. That's why they pay more. Number 10. Mechanical engineering. By the way, the interesting thing, the college with the highest median alumni starting salary for the major of mechanical engineering, take a guess. You'd never guess it. I would have never guessed it. U.S. State, the U.S. Naval Academy for mechanical engineering. Yes. But that's number 10. Number 9, aerospace and aeronautical engineering. Number 8, materials engineering. Number 7, systems engineering. Number 6, electrical engineering. Number 5, mathematics and computer science. Number 4, computer engineering. Number 3, nuclear engineering. Number 2, chemical engineering. And number 1, petroleum engineering. You sort of see where the demand is even when you talk about a college education. And we talk about the jobs that are available out there. Mike Rowe talks about it all the time. Trades. You know, things where you've got to be smart, but get your hands dirty, pay a lot. Even if you don't get a college degree, that's what pays. And we now know, if I said this 20 years ago, people would have been all over me. They're not anymore. When you say there are jobs that young Americans just don't want to do anymore. To the extent, to the percentage of the population that would do those jobs in our history. That's one of the reasons that a lot of these jobs are in demand. But if you look at it, did you note something? Engineering, computer engineering, computers and engineering. That's great advice. And that would be the advice I would give the last caller. If I had kids, unless you know what you want to do, you know, specifically, for example, you want to be a doctor. And you may have to go into debt to be a doctor. You're probably likely, unless you come from a rich family, have to go into debt to become a doctor. That is the minority of people that are going to college, though. But overall, do you need a college degree in the arts today? Is that going to get you employed somewhere? In all likelihood, in a great paying job, a job that people, that a lot of young people expect. Remember, we talked about the expectations of young people today. Retire at 61. That's our goal. Retire at 61. That isn't even happening to people that are 61 now. They're looking at it and saying, can't retire yet. Just can't retire. Or if I do retire, I have to continue working. I'll collect Social Security at 65, 60, whatever. I forgot what it is right now, closer to 66 years of age now before you can collect Social Security. But you have a ton of people in their 60s now. For one of a few reasons. They wish to keep working because they like it. They don't wish to retire, or they're doing it because they can't afford to do it. And when you look at the surveys that are done of the number of people, even over 50, that could not handle an emergency of $1,000, people have to work. And so what it comes down to, I know it did to me, and I know it did to the people that I hung around with in my generation. It was always money first. I was reading an article today, where I see it, about millennials who are dropping out of their high-paid, stress-filled jobs to do the things that they want. And I just read the first couple of paragraphs of it, and this one woman who worked in Manhattan, she's in her late 20s and decided, nope, I don't want it anymore. There's just too much pressure, too many hours. I only get 2 weeks vacation. And now she lives in a rented house in Hawaii and, you know, has had a cutback and everything else. But she is able to do her PR job on her computer when she can get Wi-Fi, and it provides enough money for her to live on the beach in a rented house in Hawaii. I don't know the specifics or the minutiae of whether she has roommates, because it's very expensive to live in Hawaii. But she said she has to budget. And look, people can do whatever they want, you know, in their life. There is no if you can stay self-sufficient, if you're able-bodied and you can stay self-sufficient, well, then you should have the freedom to do whatever you want to do. But the fact is, I know the mindset when I was young was, I'll do anything. The money came first, because the money is what gave me the opportunity to do what I wanted to do down the line. And that hasn't changed. That reality doesn't change. Money is that key to experience the opportunities in a free society. And when it goes back to everything that we believe in on the show, when we talk taxes, when we talk, you know, regulations and taxes and the burdens that government puts on you that takes cash from your pocket, they're taking away your opportunity to do the things that you wish to do in your life. But for me, maybe it's not everybody in my generation, but it was the people that I hung around. Money came first before doing what we dreamed of doing. And I got to be in the business that I always dreamed about being in, but I never wanted to do this job. Now I do. Now it's the greatest job in the world. I didn't know that. But what I did find out was when you go for the money, not for material things, and I explain this to so many, well, okay, you're just money hungry. That's materialistic. No, wanting money is not materialistic. Wanting money means... Wanting money, in my case, meant I can control what I do with my life. I'm not in debt. I can control what I do. That's the basis behind it. And so that was the mindset that led me, which is why I had no problem. I mean, mom or dad never said, you got to work when you go to college. You just did it. We didn't view it as a hardship. I'll never forget the call Eric and I received a couple of years ago, and it was after the whole Occupy Wall Street. And this woman called, I believe she was going to UCLA, and she just said, well, I just shouldn't have to work. I said, well, you know, nothing I can do about that mindset. I shouldn't have to work. Well, our answer would be, well, we shouldn't have to pay for your education. I mean, what's a more have to, that you should have to take care of your own bills, or somebody else should be taking care of your own bills? All right, your calls and comments coming up next on this. If you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, finding available loads is easier than ever with the app from DrayNow. Mike Albert is the CEO of DrayNow and has more.
Well, we started DrayNow to give them access to freight that is a niche in the transportation industry that usually truckers aren't very familiar with. Typically, in the intermodal industry, truckers don't have visibility or access to this type of freight. Drivers choose what they want, when they want, to suit their personal lives. We really focus on short-haul movements. Our average haul may be 140 to 150 miles. We give them localized freight they can choose every day. They can do one, two, or even three loads in a day, where most load boards don't have that. The days of drivers talking about gross revenue really need to become a thing of the past, in my opinion. It's okay making $4,000 or $5,000 of gross revenue a week and using less fuel. It's more about what you put in your pocket. We have a simple vetting process where carriers enroll with us. Once they do that, they have access to the freight. There's no cost to the app. Go to our website, which is www.draynow.com, and click on the carrier tab. That actually starts the process.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. Let's head back to you and the Democrats' bill about 2 years of free community college that is being introduced into the House this week. It's not going to go anywhere, but this is an issue that they are going to raise for the midterm election and the 2020 election. And so asking you, should the government provide free college? Because that's where it's going. I know this is just for community college, but we all know where it goes. Let's go to Tommy in Kentucky. Tommy, hi, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. There is a way to do free college. It's called Mandatory Work Study College. Currently, I think there are 8 in the United States. If they would make state colleges and universities mandatory work study schools, which would mean that thousands of Democrats would lose their cushy $100,000 a year jobs cleaning toilets, then people could afford to go to school, work their way through school, and get them with a degree with minimal, if any, cost.
Now, how does the work study work in your opinion?
I went to a work study school. Students are required to work a minimum of hours. Where I went, you could buy hours, but you still had to work a minimum of 5 hours a week. Anywhere from working in the library, working in the radio station, working in the post office, being a dorm janitor, a classroom janitor, a general areas janitor, working in the registrar's office, anything that they're paying someone $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year to do. Obviously not the deans, not the actual registrar, stuff like that, not the college president, but the president's secretaries, the dean's secretaries, things like that, running copies in the registrar's office.
Were they small colleges?
The one I went to was one of the, I think most of them are. Here in Kentucky.
Right, because if you,
a larger scale.
Well, if you have a college of 9,000-10,000 students, there aren't 9,000-10,000 jobs at the college. The college that I went to, the college I went to had 9,000 students, and so.
You're not working 40-hour jobs. You're working 10 hours a week. So, however many people work in the dish room and the cafeteria, instead of paying Joe off the street $100,000 to wash dishes.
Okay, when did you go to this work study college? They still exist.
I went in the early 90s, okay. And they do still exist. They're celebrating their 100th birthday. There are two mandatory work study colleges here in Kentucky. There's one, I believe, in Montana. I think the College of the Ozarks is a mandatory work study college, and I can't remember exactly which state that is in. I think there might be one small college in California. It's actually a horse ranch.
Let me ask you this question. Is five hours a week really paying the freight for a college education if you're doing dishes for 5 hours a week?
Well, you're not having to hire somebody and pay them minimum wage or more to do it. So,
I would like to see a
minimum of 10, and you can buy part of that, and it would be half the tuition.
Okay. Oh, okay. So these
are tuition free schools. You still pay room and board.
But you just said the work study would pay for half the tuition.
Well, no. If you buy it, like where I went, you were required to work 10 hours a week. You could buy 5 of that. And it would be like half of the tuition, what the tuition would cost.
I see what you mean. Yeah, I understand the concept of having kids work. I just would like to see I'd personally like to see the finances of what it ends up at the end of the year. But thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. I'd like to see the finances, though. and what it is to create a personnel department infrastructure to put thousands of kids to work 5 days a week and make it all work out that you're actually getting everything done and what the cost of that actually is. I'm not doubting the morality of having the young people work, but 5 hours doesn't cover a lot of tuition if you're cleaning toilets or washing dishes or whatever. I'd like to see how they put that into effect. That'd be interesting to find that out. But thank you so much for your call on that. 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get aboard, we'll continue on that. Some interesting news on the trade front yesterday. What was actually said between the EU president and what happened in the Senate yesterday? They voted to cut tariffs on hundreds of Chinese goods. Didn't really make the news yesterday.
Do-gooder tough guys, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. He has a morning off. I'm Gary McNamara. I don't have the morning off. Trying to get through some of the stories that we weren't able to get through due to the fact that it's Friday and want to make sure we get to these. This one is a fascinating story. San Francisco lawmakers this week introduced a proposal to ban workplace cafeterias. Why can't I say that word? That offer free food in an effort to encourage more patronage of local businesses. Is there no end to the regulations that they will think up? City supervisors Aisha Safai and Aaron Peskin introduced the measure, which would change zoning laws so workplace cafeterias would no longer be permitted. The change would not be retroactive. Now, does that mean you can't have a cafeteria that charges? Or just a cafeteria that doesn't charge? Eric and I were discussing that because there's another city in California that passed the same law, and what they're against is the free lunches being produced from inside of the company and given to the workers. I know. What the hell is the government even getting involved? I don't care whether it's local, state, or federal, this in case local. What in the world are they getting involved in that for? Peskin said of the ban, you can't have an industrial kitchen in your office building. The ban, of course, has the support from the Golden Gate Restaurant Association. That's a Sherlock statement. Many of these companies touted the boost their employees would have on our local economy, only to provide everything from round-the-clock gourmet catering to dry cleaning on site, Peskin added. Peskin and Safi said the ban was inspired by Twitter and Airbnb, two large tech companies that are known to offer free food to employees as a perk. Although the ban is meant to help local eateries and their employees, this is the best part about it. This is where liberals will fight each other. Although the ban was meant to help local eateries and their employees, University of California, Berkeley, urban economics professor Enrico Moretti told BuzzFeed News that it would likely hurt restaurant workers more than it helps them. Why? Because the cafeteria jobs in the tech companies offer better pay and benefits. If we're talking about wages, working conditions, and benefits, I think it's likely to make things worse for the workers, Moretti said. The fraction of workers in restaurants that are offered benefits and high wages is certainly lower than what the worker would find in the cafeteria of a large company. A similar ban has already been enacted in Mountain View, California, another tech-heavy city in the Bay Area. Facebook is opening a new office there in November and would be affected by the ban if it passes. When Eric and I were looking at the story yesterday, I think it was NBC News that had it, we weren't sure because that story sort of indicated to us that you could have the cafeteria, but you just would have to charge in Mountain View. I'll have to go back and check that one. This in San Francisco would just ban the cafeteria inside the business to begin with. You just shake your head. And I remember the one office that I worked in. And by the way, this all relates because it was during college when I was a bill collector. That was my almost full-time job. I worked 35, 36 hours a week there. And then 18 to 20 hours at my other job when I went to college. But at the bank, they had a cafeteria. And during the summer, during since I was going to school, I worked the second shift, which was like 4 to 9, 5 days a week. And then we worked Saturday for like 10 hours. So during the summer, though, we went full time and worked during the day. So that's when the cafeteria was open. And I remember when you worked in a downtown area, much more convenient to just go to. Now, we paid. We had to pay in our cafeteria, but still, I think most of the people, once in a while, you might go out once every 2 weeks or something to grab something to eat. I don't remember ever. I remember going in when I would, you know, pack my lunch and I'd go out and eat somewhere. But if I didn't pack my lunch, it was always in the cafeteria because it was much easier. It was much less hassle of doing it. But it's just the fact that, what will liberals think of next? Here they are. Liberals are taking, they're taking a benefit away from the workers. This is, it's not as good, but it's almost as good as when the unions in California were lobbying to pay less than minimum wage. It's not as good as that story, but it's almost as good. Remember that one? This is when they kept raising the minimum wage in California. And unions came out and said, well, you know, this is going to even up things. You know, this is going this is going to hurt us. We want to be, we want an exemption. We want to be able to, we want to be able to, in union jobs, pay our employees less money. That didn't go over too well. We didn't think it would, but it didn't go over too well. I don't think the courts allowed them to do it, but they were pushing for that. It's like, wow, join our union, pay the dues, and make less money. Oh, what a novel idea. But here they are. Let's take away a perk. Let's take away a benefit. It's a benefit. We're going to take, we are going to take away free food as a benefit from workers. And therefore, by doing that, we will also eliminate more high-paying jobs that are more high-paying than the surrounding businesses that we wish to help. The liberal mind. 866-90-RED-EYE. One of the things we started the show off with was talking about the Democrats introducing a bill this week that would give free college tuition for 2 years. Now, the states would actually do it, but they would give the federal money to states on the condition that the states guarantee a 2-year free college for any student who wanted it. We know where this is going. The Democrats want to eventually get to free college, you know, free 4-year college, I'm sure, for any student who wants it. So asking you the question of, are you for free college or not? Let's head to you. We go to, let me see, Jim in Washington, D.C. Jim, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Full disclosure, I am a millennial. and I'm actually from a state that just passed the same law, the free college. And it's funny, my story is exactly, you had a caller, a couple of callers ago that said, go get a job, a blue-collar job, and that's exactly what I did. I actually joined a trade, and after 4 years became a master, and got my company to pay for me to go to college and become actually an electrical engineer. It's funny, it all tied in after I was on hold.
Wow.
But I think, you know, yeah. So, but I think ultimately, the stats, I can't pull them off the top of my head, but you look at the people who go to college and work outside of the degree, out a field outside of their degree, it's astronomical. I think it's in the 40%. So the Republicans, I think, should come up with something that's more market friendly, maybe incentivize companies to do, apprenticeship isn't the right word, but like, technology is surpassing, it's almost making a lot of what we have historically used college for obsolete. Like accounting is a good example of that, where the technology has become so advanced, you don't need to be a highly skilled person to be an accountant anymore. So you can incentivize companies by giving them tax breaks to kind of teach these kids out of high school, hey, we'll pay them 10, 15 bucks an hour to get a tax break. So now the labor is actually cheaper, and they're learning a skill while the company is getting cheap labor, so everyone wins.
Jim, I forgot whether this story was, there was two companies, it was about 3 years ago, there were two different companies, both like in metal fabrication. They couldn't find anybody to work there. And they actually got to the point of working, the company did without any government incentive, worked with community, the local community college, to create a curriculum that they would pay for to bring students in, and the students could come in and work at the company and then go to school also to learn more about the metal fabrication. They still couldn't find anybody.
I'm living the dream. I've worked over 1,200 hours of overtime so far this year because we're so short-handed. And I don't like, I'm not trying to brag. I'm just, if there's any people out there who are looking for a career, I just stopped paying Social Security last week. So there's tons of money in blue-collar jobs if you want to go get them. And it costs nothing to get into them, relatively speaking.
I know.
$100 in tools and a pair of boots. So, but I think that if you're going to look at a government-level solution, we should look at maybe incentivizing these. College, we're in a transition stage, I believe, in the United States educational system where we're still 50 years behind. Like, we need to catch up. Like you said earlier, we're doctors and lawyers and these highly, super highly specific skilled professions. You need college. But technology is becoming so advanced where we don't need to send kids to school for 4 years to get liberal arts degrees and come out becoming, really, we're just creating social activists. That's really what we're doing. They're unskilled in every aspect of the work. So, yeah, again, I think that maybe something like a federal tax incentive to the basically get people's foot in the door at a lower rate than what they're doing now. Because in my opinion, college degrees, for most of them, obviously your liberal arts degrees, basically any bachelor's degree outside of engineering, is nothing more than a certificate to a company that this person is somewhat reliable and able to learn. That's all it is. So they're not going to pay someone 60, 70 grand out of high school that, but they may pay them 30, 40 grand to end learn and teach them a skill at the same time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And a lot of it, because it's so desperate out there, companies are willing to actually pay for your education. I know a family member who works in retail. And in retail, they have offered him where he can take management and business courses to rise up through this retail outlet that will help him do it. And constantly they're on his case to, look, we want to promote you. We want to promote you. We want to promote you. And so even in retail out there, I think in a lot of jobs and, you know, probably I'm going to guess industrial sales jobs, things like that, there are probably a lot of demand right now. But thanks for calling, because you probably responded to when I looked at the top 10 jobs that pay the most money out of college that came out about 10 months ago from U.S. News & World Report. And everyone was either computer engineering related or engineering related, mechanical engineering, nuclear engineering, petroleum engineering, whatever. But it was all basically engineering. It's about still building stuff. And as the last caller said, he's worked 1,200 hours of overtime. They can't find people. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off, but will return for the Sunday night, Monday morning show. Coming up following the top of the hour, a couple of things keep you up. We're covering different stories that we weren't able to get to, but don't worry, we'll get to some of the current events that we have covered this week, including the latest on Michael Cohen and the president and the story out that Robert Mueller is looking at the president's tweets and where that's going to go, plus the accusation, the story that came out yesterday that Donald Trump knew about the Russian meeting with Donald Trump Jr. The interesting point is the Cohen people have come out and said that didn't come from us. We've never said that. And the source that was in the interview that Michael Cohen has done with Congress says he never said that. So where that story goes, who knows? Plus the latest on trade, the president speaking out yesterday about it, but Congress also railing at the administration, especially Republicans in Congress at the president saying, look, the Europe deal, there's really nothing there. And the soybean thing, Europe's not going to buy nearly what China was buying in soybeans. So they're claiming it's more window dressing. They want something done. Meanwhile, in the Senate, they're actually passing a bill to reduce tariffs on items from China. That and more coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. It is you and me. We've had some fun, some really interesting conversation on the Democrats introducing a bill for free community college for 2 years. They'd give money to the states and require that the states, as part of the deal, offer 2-year community college. And having some great conversation on whether you believe free college should be what we look for here in this country. We'll get back to more of that here in just a little bit. A lot of other stories out there that we want to make sure that we cover. The New York Times story yesterday that special counsel Robert Mueller reportedly is looking at Trump's tweets for potential obstruction of justice. Huh? That's according to the report. Special Counsel Robert Mueller is investigating whether President Donald Trump's tweets about Jeff Sessions and James Comey amounted to an obstruction of justice. Huh? Well, that's what I thought when I saw it yesterday. And so did Jonathan Turley, a constitutional expert, as he was asked the question about where is this going. Obstruction of justice in a tweet. Now, tweets can be obstruction of justice. And Jonathan Turley on Fox, the constitutional expert, who, by the way, is no fan of Donald Trump. They got into this conversation yesterday.
So can the president be charged with a crime over his tweets?
Well, he can be charged, just not very convincingly. If you're going to start to stitch together tweets into some criminal mosaic, then you really are reaching these sort of evidentiary dregs. I mean, it is it's a very weak type of case. A subject even a target of an investigation does not surrender their First Amendment rights to speak out in their own defense. Now, the president is someone who frankly seems to play poker with the cards faced outward. He doesn't hold anything back. He has a very short trigger. But that actually helps him in many respects. He's not just issuing these tweets with regard to the special counsel investigation. He's doing it on China. He's doing it on trade. He's doing it on his Republican and Democratic critics. He is someone who communicates through tweets and tends to be visceral in his responses. I don't see how you can possibly base a convincing criminal case on that type of social media.
Well, if this is the case, and we're going off a report here, if this is the case and the special counsel is looking at the president's tweets, particularly about Sessions and Comey, what does it tell you about Robert Mueller and his investigation?
Well, this would really undermine his credibility and that of his investigation. There is another possibility that he is looking into these tweets as part of his report to Congress. He might view that report as laying the foundation for something like impeachment and showing that these tweets are part of this broader mosaic. But I think reaching for the social media as a form of evidence is a sign of weakness. I felt the same way about the courts that used the president's tweets as a critical piece of evidence in the immigration cases. Ultimately, that failed before the Supreme Court. I think this would even fail more in a much more spectacular fashion to try to base a criminal charge on this type of stuff.
And I agree. When I saw that yesterday, first thing I thought was, again, when we start talking about obstruction of justice, the president can't obstruct justice in something that he constitutionally is allowed to do, which is he can criticize anybody that he wishes to do. He can fire the people that he constitutionally has the authority to fire for any reason whatsoever. As we've said, in a typical obstruction of justice case, what you have is you have, and we look at Watergate, for example, you have a crime that was committed. And the crime was the break-in to the Democrat headquarters, the break-in in order to bug the Democrat headquarters. That was the crime. All right. That was the initial crime. What was the obstruction of justice that eventually was going to be used to impeach Nixon but never got to that point? The obstruction of justice was the destruction of evidence, the president knowing and doing whatever he could to, you know, to get rid of evidence that pointed to the crime. That's obstruction of justice. In that case, you had two examples of breaking the law. You were trying to destroy evidence in a case, and you had an illegal activity that was committed in the first place. What the Democrats' hope is that, again, we know over a year and a half into the allegations that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election, and then Trump colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. There is no allegation of how he did it, which you would need for any crime. What is the actual allegation? And what they're trying to say is, no, he didn't destroy evidence. No, he didn't threaten. We have no evidence that he threatened anybody, but he fired somebody who was involved in the investigation. Well, that didn't obstruct it. The justice still went on. The Justice Department still did what they were going to do anyhow. Robert Mueller got in because of the firing of Comey, so it didn't stop the investigation. And so you don't have either point. You don't have a crime in either area. You don't have an initial crime, and you don't have an actual crime of obstruction of justice when the president fired, and clearly, and this is the interesting thing, Rod Rosenstein, who's the head of the investigation, is the one who recommended that Comey be fired. And so it's just bizarre. It's bizarre if he's trying to find, you know, looking at the tweets, unless Turley, as Turley said, this is just going to be part of his report that Trump shouldn't have done this, even if it doesn't lead to impeachment or any type of crime. It's still just a very, very weak case. And I think the point that he does make is Trump tweets about everything. And he does. He tweets about everything. And so you can't sit there and say, well, he just used this Twitter in this particular case, and therefore it's obstruction of justice because he specifically used Twitter where he normally doesn't use Twitter, even if that would still be a poor case. But still, you would sit there and say he used this, which showed his intent was to stop the investigation. Well, here's the thing. You can think about stopping an investigation all the time. Thinking about it and saying that I want the investigation to be stopped is one thing. Committing an illegal act to do it is something completely separate. And if tweets are your evidence, I would agree with Jonathan Turley. This is really, really weak on Mueller's case. And as we have said before, and we will continue to say it because we believe this is what's lost completely in this. I was glad that Rand Paul brought it up last week. I think the Republicans have been horrible in not bringing this up every single time they discuss it. Rand Paul did last week. The only collusion with the Russians that we have is the Hillary campaign and the DNC. That's it. And we have the specific allegation, as we have. And I know you're probably sick of hearing it, but it's important to bring it up, because nobody else is really bringing it up. The mainstream media has ignored it as if it doesn't even exist. The elephant in the living room, the media says, well, we don't see nothing there. And we know Hillary Clinton and the DNC paid Perkins Coie, who paid Fusion GPS, who paid Christopher Steele, who got unverified information, some of it salacious, from the Russians in order to destroy Donald Trump's chances of winning the election. When they couldn't do that, they decided to destroy the legitimacy of his election win. There's the only collusion. You know how many times we've said that and how many Democrats have called to object to that statement? Zero, because they know they can't. And that's the society that we live in today with the media, with the mainstream media. We'll focus on one thing where there's no specific allegation and completely ignore, as if it doesn't even exist, a specific allegation of the collusion that we claim that we are against and outraged about. And as we've said many times, tell us where we're wrong. And you can't. 866-90-RED-EYE coming up here. The U.S. Senate, very, very quietly, voted yesterday to cut tariffs on hundreds of Chinese goods. I got to see if the president tweeted on that yesterday. In day three, I haven't heard the president come out with a lot of tariff talk yesterday, so I'm still optimistic. I'm still optimistic that he's a free trader. Now his administration is out there promoting the fact that it was their intention all the time to pressure the EU, in order to get to the point where they could drop all tariffs, all subsidies, all caps. And as we said, if everybody wishes to believe that is true and that there wasn't a huge concession from Trump, because that's not where he was headed. He was not headed there. Wilbur Ross wasn't headed there. I got mind blank here for his other trade representative, who's clearly a protectionist. They wanted to head towards more protectionism. And you know how you know that? Not just because it's my opinion, it's because all they talked about and all Trump talked about was the $150 billion in the trade imbalance between the EU and the United States. Well, if your goal now is to drop all tariffs, in all likelihood, the trade deficit will go up. Over the long term, the trade deficit will go up. If that's your goal for all countries in the United States, I mean, Trump for 40 years has given the opposite opinion. And so, but if you wish to believe it, that's fine. As long as we're going in the direction that Eric and I approve of, which is much more free trade. But the president went from a month ago, even 48 hours ago, being somebody who was promoting protectionist policies and using protectionist language to someone now. Well, let me put it this way, because I think it's a better way of putting it. 2 days ago, he was still promoting being the most protectionist president in my history of being alive. And now, the rhetoric over the last couple of days is the most free market, free trade president in the history of my life. Now, I think that's a good thing. I'm just recognizing that there has been a complete shift in 48 hours in the administration. And it's lasted for more than a day, which makes me just a tiny bit optimistic. Tiny bit. So hopefully that's the direction the administration wishes to go in. But we'll tell you what happened in the House yesterday and also the Senate. And part of the negotiations between EU president and President Trump, where the EU president said to Mr. Trump, quote, "If you want to be stupid, I can be stupid as well." That is a quote. So that and more all coming up, plus your calls and comments, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, but he has the morning off. Would love to hear from you. Let's go to John in Connecticut. John, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I got a funny twist on this thing. We know that the Russians have been trying to hack our election. They tried to hack this last one. They've been trying to hack everyone we've had.
Yes.
All right. Now, we know that the DNC was actually, you know, colluding with the Russians, if you want to say it, along with Hillary Clinton. But here's a twist. They come up with something against Donald Trump, but then stuff comes out about Hillary. Now, here's the only socialist in the room who really had a shot at becoming president. You know where I'm going with this?
Oh, yeah. They actually wanted Bernie Sanders. Like, now they're going to hack the DNC to ensure that Ocasio-Cortez wins the 2020 election, right? I think, and again, I'm not involved in the intelligence. Most of the intelligence I've seen says that the Russians really don't prefer a candidate. What they prefer is causing disharmony within the American society. And they feel like people have, I've heard all the time, well, see, they've succeeded in doing it. Well, there's always been disharmony in the United States since the very beginning. We've had disharmony, one faction against another faction. So it's part of a democracy. If the Russians feel that they've been successful, fine. But, you know, the reason that 55%, and thank you so much for your call, the reason that 55% of Democrats still believe that the Russians changed the vote total when it's completely false, the reason that they believe that is not the Russians' fault. The reason that they hate Donald Trump is not the Russians' fault. The reason that they are that people are completely delusional in their mindset today has nothing to do with the Russians. That lays right at the hands and the mindset and the brains and the heart and the souls of the people who allow themselves to think that way. So when I hear, well, see, Russia has succeeded. Look what they've done to the American society. Well, no. Russia might have thrown a couple of ads on Facebook, but this all would have gone on, whether the Russians were involved in attempting to hack the election. The Russians didn't do this. The American public did it. We're always trying to blame someone else. the delusional mindset that exists out there right now on the left. The Russians trying to hack into the DNC has nothing to do with that. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. That is on us. So, be interesting to see, though, who the Russians would favor in 2020. If Bernie Sanders in the primary was running against Ocasio-Cortez, who would the Russians favor? That's a good question to ask. I don't have an answer for that. More of your calls and comments coming up if you'd like to get in. 866-90-RED-EYE. You can be the temporary host since Eric is gone with me. It's time for your national forecast, and it's brought to you by Video Road Log.
We're going to start to see a shift in the pattern that we've been experiencing much of this week. Now moving into the weekend, the hot weather will remain in the west, but the rain will begin to dry out in the east and northeast. We have a weak frontal boundary that's pushing through the central plains and Midwest, and once that rain is through, we will see some clearing skies and beautiful conditions for the weekend for places like Kansas City, Indianapolis, and Chicago. By tomorrow, that frontal boundary will be pushing into the south, so look for some scattered showers Saturday from North Texas into Louisiana and North Georgia. We'll see some periods of sunshine throughout the East Coast this weekend, but some spotty showers. Primarily along the coast, west of I-95 in the east and northeast, things will be drying out. Good chance for showers in the central Rockies tomorrow, including Denver and the Four Corners region, where rain is desperately needed, but it will remain dry and hot in the west. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. What, we could see some rain here? Please, just a little.
Bona Show.
And I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, who has the morning off. Just because the last caller brought it up, you know, when it, he had talked about the fact of what if the Russians actually wanted Bernie Sanders to be president? And that was the entire case. And as I said, look, the Russians aren't the one that created the delusional mindset that exists out there in so many areas in our society right now. One of them is Democrats believing, and this was a poll that just came out again yesterday, another poll. And you know that we've been following this for the last, I think from April or May of 2017 when the first poll came out that showed the vast majority of Democrats. I think at that point, I'm doing this from memory. From 2017, I believe it was like 62 or 63% at that point of Democrats believed in a YouGov poll. This goes back to April, May of 2017, that the Russians actually hacked into the election machines, changed the vote totals, and that's why Trump won. Earlier this late winter, early spring, they did another one. Another poll came out that showed it was up to 66% of Democrats that believe that. It actually increased, even though there's never been a story with a specific allegation that this happened. The only thing that you did have was in stories that were talking about collusion. The allegation is Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election, which you saw all over the place. In 2017, Eric and I used to read all the articles that would make, you know, this is what they're investigating, but never make a specific allegation in the article. Well, you see that enough, and people believe it. But now a majority of Democrats still think that Russia tampered with vote counts in order to help Donald Trump win the 2016 election, despite there being no evidence whatsoever, not even one story in any publication that that specific allegation was true in any way, sourced or whatever. 55% of Democrats believe it's either definitely true or probably true that Russia tampered with vote tallies in order to get Donald Trump elected president, according to a new YouGov Economist survey published Wednesday. The good thing is it's down about 10 points since the last one that I saw. The bad news is a year and a half in, the majority of Democrats polled still believe that the vote totals were changed in the 2016 election. The Russians did not create that kind of delusional mindset. That's on the people that decide to believe things where there's no evidence that exists that that is true. That's on them. That's not on the Russians. By the way, the other thing is talking about Bernie Sanders here. The other poll we started off the show with, but a lot of people are just waking up right now. If socialist candidates ran today, according to a new Hill TV Harris X American Barometer poll, the socialist candidate was running today, 76% of respondents in that survey said they would not vote for a socialist candidate, while 24% of those polled said they have no problem with a hypothetical socialist candidate. That's how it was asked. It wasn't president, but just a socialist candidate. Would you vote for a socialist candidate? 76% of respondents said no. You know what I'd like to ask? It just the polls don't have any credibility unless you ask further questions like, would you ever vote for a socialist candidate? No. Would you vote for a candidate who would guarantee you that everything in your life would be free? Yes. I don't even know if the almost three quarters of Americans cannot tell you the three branches of government, which means the majority of Americans have no idea how our society runs. They have no idea why our society is different from any other society. They have no idea when people say American exceptionalism. Let me not slur through that again. They have no idea what American exceptionalism means when people say it. You don't understand anything about how our society and why our society was set up if you can't name the three branches of government. You just don't. You're clueless. You don't even know why you live in this society, yet you're commenting. Because if you don't understand the separation of powers, you don't understand the mindset of the founding fathers, you don't understand the debate about liberal justices on the Supreme Court versus constructionist judges or originalist judges on the Supreme Court. You have no idea. To me, that opened my eyes completely to why people say, well, I want a liberal judge, I want a conservative judge. I understand completely now why the majority of Democrats view the Supreme Court as just another legislative branch, because they have no idea how the country was formed. They don't know why we even exist. They don't understand the separation of powers. They don't understand the genius of the founding fathers, whose major concern was to do anything possible to ensure that the concentration of power in this country could not be shared with a few people or one group of people. They were doing everything they possibly could to ensure that we never ended up a dictatorship, monarchy, whatever, where individuals or small concentration of power, a one-party system as you see in communist nations, they were trying to do everything possible so you did not have the small concentration of power in a few hands. Democrats love the fact that if they could have liberal justices that would agree with their day-to-day politics, they would love that, because those justices would be unaccountable and it would be impossible to overturn radical judgments, because you would have to change. You would have to come up with a constitutional amendment and go through that process. So they wish to do everything to destroy the separation of powers, as long as it's in their favor. And that's why you see, and we played earlier this week, I believe, Elizabeth Warren and other Democrats talking about, as if they're a politician, the justices. We talked about Cory Booker. Cory Booker talking about evil. And the evil of what Kavanaugh believes. And evil? What evil? He's a judge. He simply interprets, is this the law of the land? Is this what the people of the country voted for? But they view it, and if you see the Democrats talking about it, it's where Kavanaugh stands on the issues. A judge is not about where you stand on the issues. It's where you stand on the Constitution. It's where you stand on interpreting the law that the elected representatives have made through being elected through we the people. So when I see these polls here on socialism, whatever, I guarantee you could sit there and if you said, do you believe we should live in a society that provides free health care, free college, free housing, free food? See what the response of Americans would be. You can lay out a socialist society. If you say the word socialism, I still believe it has a dirty connotation from during the Obama when Obama ran in 2008 in the Obama candidacy. That's when the left was talking about the fact that socialist is a new, calling him a socialist was calling him the N-word. It's just a new way of using the N-word. And I think that's why you have so many obvious socialists. You know, when Maxine Waters earlier this week came out and said, no, I'm a capitalist. The woman who called for the nationalization of the oil companies. That called for the philosophy of communism for the oil companies. Government ownership of the oil companies. Oh, I'm a capitalist. No, you're not. It's like the but they understand the word. They believe the word is still poison. Maybe they got an early version of this poll. Ocasio-Cortez, I'm a democratic socialist, not a a Democrat socialist. There's a difference between a democratic socialist and a socialist. And now they're all running saying we got to move away from socialism, got to move away from socialism. But what are they actually promoting? What would they actually want? They're running away from a word, maybe, but what would they actually do? And what would Americans say if you rephrase the question differently? If you just talked about all the benefits of socialism. Look, we talked about the Republican Party moving further to the left in that way. Remember Obamacare? Vast majority of Republicans against it. Obamacare came into effect. Okay, we hate the mandate. We hate the taxes. We love the benefits. And that's why the Republican Party, now the Republican Party got bashed for just getting rid of the mandate. But if you looked at the polls, that's what the polls showed the Republicans wanted. They wanted the mandate gone. They wanted the benefits there. As we've even accused, even though Democrats are in a huge dream world of believing that socialism can work, as we have stated, some Republicans are actually worse because they believe that that we can live in a society that we want a society to take care of everything that we want, but we don't want an intrusive society. We want a big government society, but we don't want it to be intrusive in our lives. That, to me, at some point, is more delusional than the way the Democrats actually think, if you think you can have both. If you think you can have a big government that provides everything to you, but not an intrusive government. At that point, some Republicans are more delusional than even Democrats are. And that's saying a lot. But if you believe in that philosophy, you are. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE. One more point that I want to, we got time. One more point here I want to make here. The whole CNN story that came out yesterday where the reports that Michael Cohen claims that then-candidate Trump knew in advance about the June 2016 meeting in Trump Tower in which the Russians were expected to offer campaign dirt on Hillary Clinton, which they did not. Interesting here. On I'll read this from Mediaite.com. On Thursday evening, CNN broke an exclusive report that Michael Cohen claimed President Donald Trump personally approved a June 2016 Trump Tower meeting with the Russians, who were said to have then damning information on then challenger Hillary Clinton. That is significant in part because Trump has contended he knew nothing about the meeting before it took place. However, an MSNBC report is now shedding doubt if Cohen's claims came from the president's former attorney himself. Lanny Davis, Cohen's attorney, told the network that while he had no comment on the matter, it wasn't his team that put out a story and implied that it might have been Trump people who did it. We didn't give the story. We didn't say that. Trump's team must have said it. So there you are right now on that story. Figured I would at least cover that. So we don't know on that one. Well, we do know. CNN came out with a story, a source story, and Cohen's attorney said that story didn't come from us. Oh, and the other source that where I saw it, another source inside of Congress when Cohen testified before members of Congress, he didn't say that. So there's where we are in that story. We'll see where that goes over the weekend. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Radio 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. Sorry, I couldn't find the microphone button. I've got so many pieces of paper in front of me. You should have seen me scrambling to find the microphone button to turn it on. Coming up following the top of the hour, we got a few more stories here. GDP numbers supposed to come out for the second quarter today. And they're saying anywhere from 4% to over 5%. For the second quarter. And it would be, this would be a big boost to the president and his ability to go out and say the tax cuts work. So it's going to be fascinating. If we were anywhere near 5% growth, be fascinating to see what the rhetoric would be from the Democrats, how they would come back at that. Now, one of the things we'll talk about here coming up here following the top of the hour is the trade talk yesterday and how Republicans are fearful of the tariffs that exist and the tariffs that might go into effect and how they might affect the economy and their election chances. They were talking about that yesterday.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.